Hi and welcome back. Today we're talking to Sasha Connor. She is the founder and CEO of Virtual Work Insider. Sasha started her virtual and remote career way back in 2010 when the whole thing was quite novel. She has since set up Virtual Work Insider, which is an advisory and consultancy and education platform for the remote and distributed teams for small and big businesses. I really had a fascinating talk here with Sasha, especially, you know, in today's new normal, which is, of course, COVID and Corona, where a lot of people have been forced into remote work environments. And not only that, you know, of course, outsourcing is really a distant cousin, or certainly relies on most of the concepts of successful remote work principles. So had a fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed it and certainly learned a lot. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. Today, I'm joined by Sasha Connor of Virtual Work Insider. She is the founder and CEO. Sasha, I want to start the conversation by asking you, what is a distributed company?
Yes. So let's talk about kind of this, what I call the spectrum of remoteness. So you have on one side, you had companies and teams that were fully co-located. On the other side of the spectrum of remoteness, you have frogs or fully remote organizations. So organizations that don't have any brick and mortar location that were fully remote. And in the middle, you have a couple of other organizational options. So one is a geographically distributed company. So a company that might have a headquarters in one location and several satellite offices in different areas of the same country or across the globe. And you might also have a hybrid organization. So an organization that has some offices, a headquarters in one location and maybe some other satellite offices, and then also some fully remote employees as well.
You work with a lot of large companies, a lot of enterprise, and just by nature of their size, they are distributed, aren't they? I mean, you can't have maybe 10,000 people sitting in one building, and even if you do, they're going to be spread across floors. So, you know, is it true that as a business gets bigger, it needs to have the fundamentals of successful communication strategies so that effectively they are remote enabled?
Yes. So you're hitting on something really important that a lot of those large organizations actually don't realize until you have somebody who comes and talks to them and it highlights the fact that they are already working in virtual teams even before the pandemic hit, even before we had to have most of these organizations that jumped into frogs or fully remote organizations. These organizations were working across distance. That's the common denominator. But many of them had not been thinking about it that way. So they were using kind of old school leadership and communication techniques, even though, like you said, there might be a headquarters with thousands of people, but there are people working across buildings and they're not commuting from building to building for meetings. They're still having virtual meetings, but had never thought of themselves as working in virtual teams.
Right. And I suppose if you're, you know, as much as 10 meters away, then you're in effect remote, aren't you? And it doesn't really matter as much if you're 10 meters or 10,000 kilometers. It has that same sort of buffering effect and same filtering.
Exactly. Yes.
And so your specialty has been brought into the limelight, obviously, recently with the advents of COVID. No doubt you're like epidemiologists, you're probably rushed off your feet now. You've got a lot of calls that you're catering to and people inquiring how they do this remote thing. Can you first maybe introduce Virtual Work Insider and how you got into this industry?
Sure. So my company teaches people how to lead, communicate, and collaborate effectively across distance. And how I ended up starting this company was back to my original career, which was actually in marketing. So I'm a marketer by trade. I've spent 18 years working both agency side for advertising agencies and then client side. So I worked for the Clorox company for 14 years. So it's a $6 billion company that's headquartered in Oakland, California, and sells all sorts of consumer goods, from Clorox bleach and disinfecting wipes, which are super important right now, to things like charcoal and Brita water filters, etc. So I worked from our headquarters in Oakland, California for 6 years. And that's when my husband and I had our daughter when we were living in San Francisco. And we were spending so much of that first year of her life traveling back and forth between the Bay Area on the west coast of the United States back to Philadelphia on the east coast of the United States, where my family is from and my husband's family is from. So we decided that we needed to kind of make a long-term plan for our family. And we needed to make a decision whether we wanted to live near the people that we loved or whether we wanted to stay near the careers that we loved. And I thought I was going to have to make a choice. But then I had a bold idea, which was to ask to see if I could keep my job with Clorox and move to Philadelphia and do my job remotely. But this was back in 2010, and it was pretty unheard of at the time to have a job like I did. I was in brand management. I was leading large new product innovation teams. It was unheard of not to do that job at headquarters. But I had a good reputation there, and the chief marketing officer said, you know what? You can be a guinea pig for us. You can be an experiment. Let's see what you can do. But it came with some caveats, like, you'll never get promoted, or you won't get to work on certain businesses, because to be promoted or to work on those businesses, you have to be here at headquarters. So it was very headquarters centric still, as you can imagine. So I took that on as a personal challenge to see how I could overcome those barriers that they put in my plate, in my way. And so I spent 8 years then leading large distributed teams from 3,000 miles away from the majority of my team. And while I was leading this team from a distance, I was having to relearn everything, how to do everything. Sometimes I felt like I was blindfolded. Sometimes I felt like I had one hand tied behind my back. And what I realized as I was learning these skills was that the skills that I was learning working fully remotely were applicable to 95% of the company, because the company, as you said earlier, Derek, was so already geographically distributed. We had different offices in different cities, states, and across the globe. And so I, in my spare time, I created a passion project where I started the first ever virtual workforce employee resource group. So what we did as a resource group within the company was actually help to teach the skills to work across the distance, to work across the different office sites. And that I started doing that work as a side project on top of my marketing director job back in 2012. And so little did we know that that was going to be setting that the company Clorox up for success when something like a pandemic hit and they had to move completely remotely. So long story short, I was bitten by the bug of trying to help people to be able to lead and communicate and collaborate across that distance, because I know how hard it is. And I wanted people to not have to go through that huge learning curve that I did by helping teach them the skills. And so I created my business a little over 18 months ago, and it turned out to be a good time to step into this area.
Yeah, incredible timing, isn't it? So prescient. It is funny, we talk to a lot of clients about offshore staffing, and a lot of them are very apprehensive. They say they're a small business. They say they want everyone sitting beside them in their own office. And they say that they don't necessarily have the sophistication of a big business where they can, you know, manage teams across different locations. But, you know, you only need to look at the local cafe, and if they have two branches, they are already a distributed workforce, you know, and a sort of humble cafe owner has to figure out processes and structures to carry on the branding, carry on the identity of the cafes, and align the workforce and align the training. So I think it's not necessarily as daunting as people think. It's just when you sort of throw into the mix the concept of, you know, global workforce and virtual and online. Do you find the apprehensions of people sort of outweigh the real impact or friction?
I think before the pandemic, there's always going to be a before COVID and after COVID. Before COVID, I would be talking to leaders at organizations, and if I used the word remote, they bristled. There was a real concern about about thinking about somebody working fully remotely, or even worse, working from home. Like that really got people to bristle, because the words working from home conjured up imagery of somebody laying on a couch, eating potato chips, watching TV, not actually working. And so it was easier to talk to a leader about how they were going to need to adapt their skills within their workforce to work across distance and work across locations. So for because then it started they started to realize, oh yes, I have a sales office in one location, I have a headquarters here. Yes, I do need them to work better together. But it was really hard to get them to start thinking about beyond location to location, but actually additional workplace flexibility, and whether people were coming in and out of an office site a couple of days a week and working remotely the other days, or working fully remotely. Many organizations were not there yet, and then this pandemic pushed them to go all the way, like all the way 100% to remote. And so now many organizations now are in the midst of trying to get their feet under them to figure out how do we support our employees during this situation, and what does this mean for the future? Do we want to go back to the way it was before, or actually should we take this as a learning opportunity to change what we do moving forward?
Yeah, and I mean, let's talk about that then. The COVID has really changed the face of the planet, really, in how we interact with people, in terms of businesses that are thriving, businesses that have now failed, and of course how we work and interact with people in our businesses. And this is very different depending on what state you're in, depending on what country you're in. Rules are different. How has COVID impacted remote work for you?
Well, for me personally, I had been working 10 years remotely when all this happened. And when COVID hit here in the United States, I thought to myself, wow, this is the marathon I didn't even know I was training for. I'm ready for this, right? This is not going to be that big of a deal for me. And then I quickly realized that this is not normal remote work. Normal remote work, when I would have been consulting with a client prior to COVID, I would have talked to them about if you have a remote worker, that worker needs to have a controlled environment. It needs to be seamless to the rest of the organization from wherever they are working from. There can be no interruptions. And even myself, I have two kids, and there were always two locked doors between me and my kids, or my kids had a some sort of caregiver or were at school. So right now we are having work-life integration like we've never had before. We are juggling work and life like crazy. And so right now it is trying to help these organizations identify, first, this isn't normal remote work. Second, that this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. This is a longer term thing than anybody actually thought in terms of needing people to continue to work remotely or work from home. And we need to not only help people with the skills to do it, but we actually have to be really empathetic with each other right now during this time, because every single person is in a unique situation in terms of what it is that they're trying to juggle and keep their head above water.
And what have you seen in terms of sort of implementations and people having to convert from fully office based to fully work from home? What are some on the ground, I suppose, stories? Because it's very mixed, isn't it? If you work in a big organization, you can probably work from your laptop, whereas if you work in a factory, you're still bound to your workplace. Where have you seen the sort of distribution and I suppose common activities?
Yeah, there's a couple of trends or themes. There are a couple of themes that I saw. I work with many companies that actually produce physical goods. So, like you were mentioning before, there are people who actually have to go into a factory to produce things. And from talking to those clients, they're for the first, call it 60 days, maybe, they were very operationally focused in terms of putting out fire drills there. So they couldn't even really think about the knowledge workers and making sure that they had the skills and the tools to work remotely. They were really focused on, are my frontline workers safe? How do I make them safe? How do I make sure that I can produce at the capacity that I'm getting demand for some of my products. So if you think about, you know, some of the clients I work with, like Clorox, for example, that are cleaning and disinfecting products are at high demand right now. I work with Jamieson Wellness, which is a vitamins company. So again, really high demand as well. So they were really operationally focused. And then once they had gotten that kind of under control and had some processes in place, then they were able to pick their heads up and look at the rest of the workforce to say, okay, now what do you need? How can we support you? And what they were finding was that they were needing to provide some support and help in terms of health and well-being, because of what I was saying before about this constant juggle of work and life. And there being so much anxiety going on right now, between worrying about your health and here in the U.S., you know, social injustice, and there's just a lot going on. So a lot of organizations were trying to help provide some leadership skills training for how to work virtually, which I helped provide, but they were also providing programs on how to manage anxiety, for example, how to have better work-life balance, providing yoga classes virtually for teams. And then the other thing I saw in terms of right off the bat needing to happen was putting the IT infrastructure into place for some of these organizations to be able to work remotely. There are some that I worked with that none of the employees had laptops. So they had to go into crazy deployment of technology and hardware for their employees to be able to work remotely. Some had laptops but have never used video conferencing before. So they were working through supplying a video conferencing platform and then working through all of the bandwidth issues that happened because they didn't have enough bandwidth to actually support everybody on video at the same time.
Yeah, it's an incredible learning curve, isn't it? And you know, I say this quite often on this show, but just imagine if COVID occurred 20 or 30 years ago, where it simply was not possible to work from home. Yeah. And I think there's been quite an abrupt adjustment everyone has had to make, but at least the tools and technology are there to support a remote lifestyle. Whereas 30 years ago, you know, it just wouldn't have been possible. Everything was on paper, based in the office. And I think it would have destroyed society, or society would have had to continue going to the office.
I mean, you can think about that in terms of work. You can think about that in terms of shopping, right? Because we're all doing so much e-commerce right now. You can think about that in terms of schooling. We're relying on technology right now to help us keep our kids learning during this too. We are so fortunate that we have the technology that we have today.
In terms of the management philosophies, and I suppose, you know, you can go, philosophy is generally polarizing, but the principles and tools for managing people working from home, you know, I suppose sort of broadly two philosophies are: you need to measure everything, you need to monitor everything, you need to, you know, make them check in and check out. And then the other side of that philosophy is just trust your employees, treat them like adults, enable them, and they will do well for you. Where do you think the balance there is for the potentially new generation of work from home employees, where they're not necessarily in contact with an office with their colleagues? How do you manage productivity?
So I saw a range from different organizations about how they were handling this. I saw some organizations that were great in the terms of really stepping up and leading with trust and empathy and support. And then I saw some organizations and some industries that were leading out of fear and loss of control and kind of back to what you were saying, Derek, around like the measuring, the monitoring, the checking in, the saying, you know, we're expecting you to be working at home. And if we catch that you're not working, there's going to be consequences. Where, you know, at the core of the vast majority of employees is they want to do a good job. They want to hold on to their job right now, especially in times like these where they're so uncertain. And so I was giving advice to some employees that I was hearing from where they were feeling like they weren't being trusted, to reground with their employer, to reground with their manager that, you know, our goals are the same. we're both trying to help the company succeed, and I, and reiterating that you are you and reinforcing that you are still there to help meet that goal, but at the same time needing to also talk about reimagining what some of the norms are, what some of the availability norms, the communication norms are, again, because we're juggling work and life like never before. So we need to have managers and leaders who are willing to be vulnerable, to be able to share what they're struggling with right now, in order to allow the employees to speak up for what they need, to speak up to say, I have two kids in my household under the age of three, and I can get work done synchronously with the team during nap time, which is from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, for example. Or, I can't take a meeting before 9 a.m. because I've got to get my kids set up for distance learning. Those are the conversations that need to happen to support your employees and keep them really engaged. But I know that there are some organizations where the employees are not feeling comfortable being able to speak up for that. And what's going to happen is burnout. We're going to, again, back to this being a marathon, not a sprint. We are going to see, especially coming back into the fall with school starting again, but mostly distance learning in many places, where this burnout is going to really peak again.
Yeah, this is very much uncharted territory, isn't it? We have a lot of clients exploring outsourcing, and some of the simple questions, but obviously sort of very relevant, are how do we know they're working? They're in a different country. But the reality is, again, just sort of giving people a reality check of their own circumstance. A manager in an office sitting next to their colleagues or subordinates, they might check in on their work, maybe an hour a week, maybe 2 hours a month. So very much most of the time, people are working autonomously, aren't they? And then, of course, there's deliverables and work is done. But very rarely are people physically observing work being done from the workers, whether remotely or virtually. So it's funny that when it goes virtual, the managers feel like, oh my God, I can't see what they're doing. How do we check on what they're doing? But really, it's not a lot of different to if you're just sharing the same office.
Right, and I think it gets back to the loss of cues. So when you are in an office together, you get some visual cues that work is happening. You see somebody typing, you see somebody with printouts on their desk, or in my case, working with consumer products goods company, prototypes or printouts of graphics for packaging and things like that. There's cues that things are happening. There's cues because people come in the office at a certain time and leave at a certain time, and you see them coming and going. And when you think about working in a virtual environment, what you need to do is now set up what are the new cues, what are the new expectations, what are the new ways in which we are going to keep the information flowing, what are the ways in which we are going to continue to track against milestones. So, even if you were in an in-person office, you should have some sort of performance management process. You should be talking about what are your objectives for the quarter, for the month, for the year. And you should have ongoing touch points on how you are progressing against those objectives. It becomes even more important when you're in a virtual environment, but you should have done it either way. But so now, as people are finding themselves in this virtual environment, if you didn't have that performance management process set up, you should be doing that now. You should be sitting, ask for it to do it with your manager, or vice versa, have the manager, ask the direct reports to kind of put down what do they think that they can achieve over the next month, and be checking in for progress along the way.
I like that, the cues, having the social cues, and how we replace those in a virtual world is very important, isn't it? What I, cynics would say, Sasha, that people working from home aren't working so hard. They are watching Netflix. They're probably, spending a little bit longer in bed. They're not getting out of their pajamas. Is work from home more efficient? And I'm very disciplined. You sound very disciplined, but is everyone disciplined enough to work efficiently when they're not in an environment that is necessarily conducive to producing a lot of work. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
I heard this a lot, especially before COVID. Again, back to when I would talk to organizations, and if I brought up the words work from home, right, it would conjure up that image, like I said, of somebody laying on the couch. I mean, I think one of the things that's played into that perception, to be honest, is the media. So if you look back on the way that media portrayed working from home, it was goofing off. It wasn't doing the work that you said you should be doing. And so that kind of reinforced that stigma. When you look at different case studies, you actually see in the data that people do find themselves more productive when they're working remotely. One of the things that a case study that I always point to is Dell Computers. They have thousands and thousands of employees. And a couple of years ago, they decided that they wanted to try to go 50% remote by 2020. And I had some discussions with one of their heads of diversity and inclusion that was leading part of this workplace and workforce strategy change. And they had a case study that showed that they were tracking disciplinary action from when they started this program where they were getting more and more people to work remotely. And there was no difference in the percentage of disciplinary action that they had prior to going to this remote strategy to during and after the remote strategy. And so it kind of pointed to the point of, if you have somebody who's going to slack off, they're going to slack off even if they're in the office. then they're going to slack off at home. It's not that just going home then gives you license to just not get your work done. What I will tell you is that working from home allows you more flexibility to code switch or to move between doing something for your personal life and your work life, which overall should improve your overall engagement in your work, because you can kind of pick and choose at any moment kind of what it is that you want to take care of. As a working mom, it was really helpful for me to be working remotely so often, but it didn't mean I worked any less. It just meant that I was able to fit different personal activities into the cracks of my work day that I would not have been able to do if I had to be sitting in an office all day.
And what about the young people entering the workforce? And heaven forbid if COVID went on for any extended period of time, but you know, if we have a whole generation of younger people that aren't raised in an office environment, they don't have those formative years learning directly from peers, do you think that it can have an impact on the next generation of workers? Do you think that we need to learn via, you know, sharing and seeing and being in a kind of disciplined environment?
Yeah, I think that there's so many implications there. I think that there's implications for young people as they're coming into the workforce, thinking about even interns. Many internships were canceled this summer, but for those interns who had a virtual internship, very different than an in-person internship. Young people who are getting onboarded and hired right now into their very first job, for example. And I think that there a couple of implications. So one is when you start in a company, you start to get a sense of what is the culture of the team? What is the culture of the organization? And do I fit here? Does this kind of align with my own personal values? And when I talk about company or team culture, it's made up of values, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors. And it's how people work together towards a common goal and how they treat each other. And that's something that you can pick up on, again, back to cues. You can pick up on that organically when you're together, co-located. When you are at a distance from the rest of your team, it requires the team leader, the team members to be so intentional and deliberate about building that culture, about reinforcing that culture, about teaching that culture to that new person that has been added to the team. So I think again, back to those people who are starting at a new company or starting their first job, they're going to need to get some of that scaffolding. So understand some of those cues. And it's going to be up to them to ask for it, but also their team members to kind of surround them with it. And the second part of it is around understanding who your sphere of influence is. So one of the most important skills that I teach is how to influence across distance. And this goes from influencing from office site to office site, but now very much so when you're fully remote. And the first step in being good at influencing is understanding who it is that you need to influence. And oftentimes when you have a new hire that's remote, or in this case that you're talking about somebody with their first job, they won't know or understand who all of those people are up, down, inside, outside the organization that they are required to create a relationship with, to then influence for not for their career project trajectory, but also for getting business done. And so that's a really important first step, is to work with a peer or your manager to start to really help bring that sphere of influence to life for that new employee.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge difference between small and big businesses, isn't it? In the small businesses, they really just survive on organic, natural communication and prompts, and we pick it up because we're social animals. Whereas I think when you get bigger, you need to have conscious policies, conscious protocols. And this is how we work, because otherwise you can't get 200 or 2,000 people coordinating with each other. And I think this remote work means or is sort of forcing the hand of smaller businesses to become a little bit more mature in their processes, write things down. What's our culture? What do we stand for? What is that right? Is it sort of needing for smaller companies to just be more aware and overt about their processes?
Yes, because what you no longer have is any of that organic time together. The time where I just pop by your cube and ask you a question, or we all huddle together in a room together and somebody just quickly draws on a whiteboard. So you have to, like you said, have your processes written down, available to everyone. So, for example, GitLab is a fully remote company, and they're a great example of how they're very transparent with all of their processes, all of their handbook, their guidelines. It's thousands of pages, and it's accessible to anybody. You don't have to work at the company to be able to see it. So, it's a really great example to see how they're like one extreme, right? With where they've documented absolutely everything, but it gives you a sense of what you should start thinking about to document and make really transparent and available to your employees, regardless of where they work from.
So previously, the shining lights, I suppose, was Automattic, which is WordPress, and GitLab, as you say. There are a few sort of shining examples of remote, but now it seems everyone, and especially everyone, the sort of influences of new commerce like Facebook and Twitter and Google, and but even Hitachi, I believe, which is a traditional Japanese company. All of these companies are saying you don't have to come back to work. Do you think this is the the next big reckoning, the big reset, as people are saying? Or is this just sort of a bit of a fad that will kind of recede back to normal after a while?
I do not think we're going back to normal. I don't think we're going back to the way it was pre-COVID. I think that organizations are taking this as an opportunity to say, what do we want to be now in the future? They are looking at this across multiple different lenses. One being, it's can be pretty seductive to look at the real estate cost savings to say, is there a group of people that actually really don't need to be in a building to get work done productively? If so, what are the cost savings associated with that that we could then reinvest back into our people or back into our business? So that's one piece of it. They're also recognizing that this can be a reset for them to look at hiring talent. So instead of, for example, in the Bay Area, where you have very high cost of living and it's very expensive to hire talent there, and it's very hard to get good talent to want to relocate there because of the high cost of living, it now gives them the opportunity to get the best talent from anywhere. So that is a pull to look at this differently. And also in terms of employee engagement, that having workplace flexibility, having the ability to work remotely, at least part-time, has been something that employees have been asking for years. It's a perk that they've wanted. So again, this is a way for employers to think about how to retain their talent as well. So what I think is going to happen is I don't believe that overnight all of these large organizations are going to say, we are going to become, back to that frog word, the fully remote organizations. We're going to get rid of every single brick and mortar office building that we have. I think that they are going to be very strategic in thinking through what are the first groups of people that don't have to come back ever. What are the people that do have to come back and why, and start to consolidate real estate? But the big watch out for this is that is going to create more hybrid teams. So as I was mentioning before, at the very beginning of the podcast, we talked about that spectrum of remoteness. And we talked about how you can have a hybrid team, some fully remote people with some people in the office, or you can have a geographically distributed team, different office sites working together. That's actually a lot harder than a fully remote organization, because when you're fully remote, you're all on equal playing field. When you're in a hybrid organization, which is what is going to happen, it's happening right now as some office sites are opening back up and some employees are going back in if they feel comfortable. What happens in a hybrid organization is you have something called distance bias that comes up. And so the NeuroLeadership Institute talks about this in their unconscious bias model. Distance bias, it's your brain's natural tendency to put more importance on the people and the things that are closer to you than those that are further away. And that's where you get that feeling of out of sight, out of mind. That's where you struggle with what I talk about, location, inclusion and diversity. So you need to really think very strategically about how to be location inclusive instead of being office or headquarters centric.
And that comes back to one of your earlier comments right at the beginning is you know, your supportive employers said, you know, sure, you can go remote, but you'll never get a promotion. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it might have been Matt Mullenweg as well that mentioned the risk of having a hybrid model where just naturally the tendency, well, I mean, there's politics in an office, and if you're not involved in the politics, if you're the one remote person, you just get left out of everything. Mm-hmm. Is there any resolution to that? Or do you think that is just how humans interact?
I think there can be resolution to it. So I'll give you an example in that right before COVID hit, I had just completed training the entire R&D organization within Beam Suntory. So the parent company of Jim Beam whiskey and other alcoholic beverages. And that R&D organization didn't have any fully remote employees. They had employees across different office sites that were working together. And that leadership team and that organization, that function within the organization, they decided that location inclusion was going to be one of their values. they decided that they were going to behave differently, that they were going to have each other's back to make sure that nobody was left out, regardless of where they were working from. But it took time. It took time to make them aware of this unconscious bias, to give them tips and tools and ways to mitigate it. And it took buy-in from the senior leadership team to say that this is something that we value and we are going to reward. And it was really heartwarming to see how that group really embraced it. And it didn't matter whether you were working from the headquarters in Chicago or from the technical center in Louisville or from, you know, another country like Australia, et cetera, you were part of that team and they were going to make sure that you felt that inclusion.
Remote work or, you know, freeing up the ties to the geography, initially, it means that you could work from home, but then it means also for the organization, they can employ across the state instead of the town. It means that they can employ across the country. But then taking it to the next level, you know, what if, Jim Beam's employees then want to go to Australia or hang out in Bali? Are there limits, do you think, where, you know, the company says, hold on there, that's getting a little bit too fun. You need to, stay in the snow with us. Is there some sort of limit, do you think, or is this now opening the doors to a globalized employment?
I think that it opens the door further. I think that there are some considerations to think about, though. So, for example, teams that require high levels of synchronous collaboration, you need to think about the time zones. So it's really hard when you start getting past maybe four time zones to get people together synchronously without really encroaching on their personal time. And so even when I was doing the training for Beam Suntory, it was impossible to get everybody at the same time unless somebody was going to be up in the middle of the night to be training with them, right? So I think that the time zone piece of it is going to be important. I also think having stable internet access. So depending on where you are, making sure that, again, back to making this seamless for the rest of the team, that you have the capability to be accessible and that the internet is a big part of it. I'll give you an example. I took a week off recently and we went to a secluded little house on a river in Virginia just to get a change of scenery. And the internet access was terrible. We got a couple of emails during the day, but no large files could be sent out and it would have been impossible to work from there. So I think some of those things are constraints.
Yeah, it's always disappointing, isn't it, when you end up in a beautiful spot, but you just can't get internet. And the net result is a lot of frustration, I think.
Frustration until you say, you know what, I'm on vacation. I wasn't supposed to be sending this email anyway. But if you're trying to be more of a digital nomad and actually work from whatever beautiful spot you're in, yes, it would be very frustrating to not have that internet access.
Yeah, and I think these are a few of the cracks in the global workforce that still need to be, figured out. But I find it fascinating because, there's a lot of these digital nomads, there's a lot of the smaller companies that are enabling, and there's also Silicon Valley startups, and one of them is funded recently by Andreessen Horowitz, that is effectively facilitating globalized work, which I think is fascinating. But if you look into, and neither of us are lawyers, but if you look into, how do you control a globalized workforce when you have all of these different standards, when you have different, legal jurisdictions, and how are employees compliant or otherwise? And I don't know, does that even vary in the US with the 50 different states? Can an employee cross a state line and still be sort of legitimately employed under the original contract that they were previously employed under?
Yeah, as you said, I am not an employment lawyer or an accountant, but I do know that there are some stipulations about whether or not the company that you work for has an actual a site within that state, how things are taxed. They might be taxed differently depending on whether or not that the company has a presence in the state where the employee is working or not. So there are a lot of different things to think about when even within one country, moving around from state to state.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and again, it's the small companies that are leading the way, and but it's the Wild West, you know, and I can imagine there's, as you say, there's like employment law, there's the health aspect, insurances, mm-hmm. Compliance. It's an incredible thing that eventually I believe it will be ironed out, and, you know, eventually the world will just have a sort of standardized protocol, maybe, but that's many, many decades away, you'd assume. One final question, and, you know, I don't expect you either to be a futurologist, but if everything decentralizes and people are quitting the offices, what's going to happen to cities? And is it a good thing that everyone sort of clears out into the suburbs necessarily?
Wow, interesting question. I mean, I think that there's always going to be a pull for people to want to be in closer proximity to each other when not in a pandemic. I think there's something about living in a city in terms of the activity and the hustle and the bustle and the socialization. And, you know, having lived in San Francisco for several years, you know, I and that's not even, you know, as populated of a city as New York, for example, but There's a pull to that. There's an energy to that. So I don't know for sure that everybody would completely flee the city life if work was not necessarily in downtown, you know, anymore. But I do think that this will allow people to better pick where it is that they wanted to live, just like I did, right? I wanted to stay in San Francisco because I love the city and I love the work that I did, but I also wanted to live closer to my family. I wanted to be able to have the ability to buy a house with a backyard instead of having to buy maybe something very, very small in San Francisco, given how expensive it was there. I wanted my kids to be able to go to public school and not have to go to private school, for example. So there were a lot more choices that opened up to me because I became location agnostic back in 2010 in terms of work. And so I think that this will only be a positive thing for people's lives to be able to not have to choose work or where they want to live. It can be an and statement.
It's funny, isn't it? It's all the narrative about things and everyone talking about everything going remote now. There's sort of an underlying assumption that everyone wants to live in the middle of a jungle somewhere or on a beach or in the suburbs. And, you know, cities exist partly for productivity, but also, you know, they're an incredible place to socialize. And especially the kind of younger generations, they want to hang out, they want to interact, they want to mingle. And then I suppose coming full circle, younger generation, they probably want to get into the office. They want those socials. They want the beers after work. So it's difficult to completely unpick all of the sort of socialization aspects away from the workplace, isn't it?
And that's why I think even if companies start to do away with their large office sites or large campuses, they're probably going to still want to have some sort of hubs where people can get together when they want to get together, either to socialize or to collaborate around physical products if they need to, for example. So giving people that back to flexibility, so it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It's giving some modularity or flexibility in their ways of working.
Sasha, we'll leave it there. It's been a fantastic conversation and so much insight from you. If anyone wants to know more about Virtual Work Insider or connect with you, how can they do that?
Sure. Thanks, Derek. So a couple ways you can connect with me. So my website is virtualworkinsider.com. I actually have some free downloadable resources that are available on the website and also talks about my services. If you would like to connect with me directly to ask me any questions or to ask me about different skills workshops that we give, my email address is Sasha, S-A-C-H-A. At virtualworkinsider.com. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn under my name, Sasha Connor. I'm trying to, on a weekly basis put several remote work and virtual leadership tips on LinkedIn to help people as they're in this crazy transition to remote work for the first time for many.
That was Sasha Connor of Virtual Work Insider. If you want to get in touch with Sasha or know any more about what we spoke about in this podcast, go to the show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.